Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. We're going to catch up now with one of our favorites, Graham Nash. In 2018, the two-time Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, with The Hollies and CSN, released a double album called Over the Years, featuring unreleased demos and mixes, which followed the 2016 solo album This Path Tonight. This fall, Nash will be spending a lot of time in our region. On September 22nd at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, September 28th at the Egg in Albany, October 4th at the Academy of Music in Northampton, and October 15th at the Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. Some of the shows, including his stop at the Egg, will feature Nash performing two of his albums in their entirety, Songs for Beginners and Wild Tales. Graham Nash, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much, Ian. And how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm always excited to talk with you. Why did you want to do these full album performances?
Because I've never done them. And I thought, I must confess, I had tremendous pressure from my wife, Amy Grantham. She loves those two albums and has put pressure on me to do them. And so I want to do them. I want to share them. I want to share the feeling of those albums. I've tried many times to try and figure out why particularly Songs for Beginners was so important to people. And I think it's a combination of the sincerity and the intimacy of the recordings. I wanted to make them personal, and I wanted to touch your heart as often and as soon as I could. And so it's going to be very interesting. I've never done this before, but I am going to come out and do Songs for Beginners with a full band start to finish, take an intermission, come back and do Wild Tales with a full band start to finish.
Is Shane Fontaine in this particular group still?
He certainly is, thank goodness.
What else can you tell us about the band you're putting together for this show?
Well, one of the things I've had to do is let go. And I mean that by this. I used to live in California, and so, you know, I had my choice of musicians to be able to play with. But I've been living in New York City for the last 4 or 5 years, and I'm kind of out of my element there. So I'm playing with a bass player and a pedal steel guitar player and two lady singers and a drummer that I've never even met.
Wow. When do you start rehearsing that?
On the 13th of September.
There's a lot of material that you haven't played in quite a while from those albums.
That's right. And some songs I've never played.
Really?
Yeah. So here we go. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's kind of interesting to let go and not control every single musician, you know. I think it will be spontaneous. They've been learning the albums, of course, you know, whilst I was on the road. And on the 13th, we'll start putting it all together. But I think it will be a very interesting show.
What's it been like for you to revisit a lot of that material, which, you know, you haven't played before in quite a while?
Well, it's very interesting because, of course, Amy and I are on our own here in New York City, and I'm just playing them on my acoustic guitar. So I'm getting back to where it was that I wrote those songs on a piano or acoustic guitar, you know, just simple. And I'm saying hello to my songs. And right now they're talking back to me and they're having a good time.
When you look back at the recording of those albums, what do you think about? I mean, who was that Graham Nash who was writing that music?
Graham Nash at that point was a man who had been in the Hollies for 6 or 7 years. We'd had, 15, 16 top 10 hits. We were good at writing pop songs, but they didn't mean much lyrically. And I realized, particularly when I first heard me and David and Stephen sing together, and then later, of course, with Neil, that if I could take what I had learned with my time with the Hollies in terms of being able to write a melody that maybe you couldn't forget, you know, if you'd heard it a couple of times. If I could put better lyrics to those melodies, I'd have better songs. And that's exactly what happened.
In your tour in recent years, you've been playing Bus Stop by the Hollies, usually at the start. Are there other old Hollies songs you'd like to revisit while we're talking about, you know, early Graham Nash career?
Yeah, I've been doing Carrie Anne and On a Carousel as one song, you know. Quite interesting. I do King Midas in reverse also. It's very interesting. The Hollies were a really decent band, you know. When I first came to America and left the Hollies, of course, I didn't talk about the Hollies too much with David and Stephen. I mean, they weren't talking to me about the Birds or the Buffalo Springfield. We had discovered this new harmony sound that we had generated, and we had songs that we wanted to record. And so most of our efforts were personal between the three or the four of us. But I've begun to realize in these later years, because somebody sent me actually a CD of 60 songs of the Hollies on the BBC. Now, when you made music on the BBC, it was instant. You know, it was going out live. You know, you couldn't like screw up the intro and then say, well, can we do that again? There was none of that. You had to keep going. This CD sounded great, and I realized just how good the Hollies were. We were a very decent pop band, no doubt about it. And I've come to realize that in later years. And my friend Alan Clark, who I've kept in touch with all these years, now has a new album out in England. Comes out in September.
I had thought he had retired. I didn't realize he was still going.
He had retired. He had some problems with his throat, but he slowly got back into it, and he was playing around on his computer with GarageBand and making little funny tracks, and all of a sudden, he's got four or five of these funny little tracks, and his friends are telling him they sound quite decent, so finished the album, and that's what he did.
Well, in your history, it all goes back to the two of you and your passion for music like the Everly Brothers and so on. So could you see yourself working with him again sometime?
Yeah, we talked about it about 3 weeks ago, as a matter of fact. I was in England finishing up my European tour and had dinner with Alan and my old friend Ronnie Stratton. We talked about it. And there's every chance that we could work together again. I think one of the things that I'd like to do is do a greatest hits of the Hollies by me and Alan. We started the band. It was based on me and Alan singing and the way that we could create harmony. And I think a greatest hits from me and Alan's point of view would be quite interesting for the Hollies.
Do you ever think about what would have happened in your life had the Hollies accepted more enthusiastically the songs that you were writing that led you to lead the Hollies because they sort of gave you short shrift, you know, the stuff, the early CSN stuff?
Yes. Marrakesh Express and
right.
Stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. What can you do? It was Crosby that really saved my artistic life, because the worst thing that you can do to an artist is make them doubt themselves. And when I wrote Marrakesh Express and showed it to the Hollies, I heard the awful track that the Hollies made of Marrakesh Express. It doesn't have any vocals on it, but the track itself is just limp, because quite frankly that song needs the power of a train in it. And that's what Stephen Stills did so brilliantly with his overdubbed electric guitars that he did on Marrakesh Express. Once the Hollies didn't want to record my songs, I began to doubt myself. And it was Crosby that says, wait a second, you know, those are decent songs, you know. They're the crazy ones. Don't think, you know, that you're no good, and don't stop what you're doing. Come on. These are decent songs, and I'll be very grateful to David for doing that.
Well, I mean, you've sort of led me there. Has there been any sort of rapprochement between the two of you lately?
I haven't spoken to David in almost 3 years.
It seems as if, you know, he's, I don't know, I follow him on Twitter, and there's the new documentary out where he talks about having made a lot of mistakes, and I follow CSN updates very closely. It seems like the door might be open.
Well, you know, with the door, there are always two choices. You either close it or you open it. you know, and right now the door is closed. We have to love each other before we can make great music together. This is not like just, you know, two guys singing together. We have to really like each other before we can get on each other's front page with music that we are creating. We have to love each other, and we don't. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
There was a time where you two were talking like every day. You live close by with each other. How have you replaced that relationship in your life today, now that it's not there anymore?
I've gone inwards. Mm-hmm. I've gone inside myself. And I'm realizing something. And it took me many years to realize it, that I'm actually not bad, you know. when you're in a band with David and Stephen and Neil Young, you know, I'm not a great musician. I'm not one of those people that can get up and jam. You know, I'm just not that kind of a musician. I mean, I can play primitive guitar and primitive piano to be able to write songs, but I'm not really a great musician. And particularly when I was in CSNY, I often felt that I was the least talented one of the four of us.
That's it's surprising to hear, because they used to introduce you, and I think this is true, when describing the different members, as the one who wrote the songs that everyone wants to sing, like the whole world loves your songs.
How strange. but that's true. But you know, I still didn't completely believe in myself. And for these last two or three years that I've been a solo performer, I've really examined who I am and what my value is to both myself and to my public.
It's interesting, because you are the band leader, even though you're saying in that group you're not maybe the most talented to jam or something. But when you're on this tour in particular, you'll be the one everyone's watching.
Correct. And I'm enjoying that. I'm getting to do songs that I have never done before, and I'm getting to do songs that I didn't have room to do, because when you're in a band with four strong writers, there's not much room. You know, generally there's 12 songs on a record, right? You know, so if there's four of us, that I've always wanted, three are Neil's and three are Stephen's and three are David's and three are mine. But what do you do when you write faster than that? You know, you have to do solo records. You have to do songs, you know. And that's one of the things I'm enjoying right now. And a lot of people, you know, that enjoy music but don't write music are fascinated with the art of songwriting. And people want to know where my head was at when I wrote Teach Your Children, or when I wrote Immigration Man, or when I wrote Our House. You know, what were you thinking? What provoked those songs out of me? And people want to know, and so I tell them. And that's part of the show, is talking to the people. Because I want them to realize a couple of things. First of all, I want my audience to realize that I want to be there. Mm-hmm. To make music for them. I'm not going to phone it in, and I'm not going to sing it half-assed. I'm going to sing it with as much passion as I can get out of this 77-year-old body. And I do pretty good. I know I've sung some of those songs thousands of times, but they're important to people. They're touchstones in their life. They know where they were when they first heard Teach Your Children. You know, it's important to them. And so I realize that importance. And so I'm not going to not do them or sing them half-assed. I'm gonna sing them the best way I can.
When you were asleep, I was kissing your forehead. You gave a frown, so I kissed you again. You started waking and put your arms round my waist, just making sure I was there.
We are listening to my interview with Graham Nash on The Roundtable. The former member of The Hollies and CSN is bringing his solo tour to our region for several dates this fall. September 22nd at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, September 28th at the Egg in Albany, October 4th at the Academy of Music in Northampton, and October 15th at the Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. Over the years, I've spoken with Graham Nash a handful of other times. He's talked about his decision to leave the Hollies, CSN's formation, Woodstock, CSNY's raucous 1974 tour, and much more. You can find those interviews at WAMC.org. You just said that you write faster than just getting three tracks on a 12-track album. Have you been working on a new solo record of late?
Absolutely. This Path Tonight was a combination of 20 songs that Shane Fontaine and I wrote in a month. And we recorded those 20 songs in 8 days. This Path Tonight had only 10 songs on it, 13 if you bought the deluxe box set from iTunes and Best Buy and stuff like that. So we have 7 songs left over that didn't quite fit the picture, and so they were left off the album. So I have 7, and I've written 5 or 6 since, and I'm sure Shane's writing. So on this next tour, that is my last tour of the year, we're going to be putting together the next studio record.
I don't know. I'm thinking about when I was getting ready to speak with you, our buddy Arlo Guthrie said at one point that it's hard to write when you're happy. And you've had so much, you know, personal upheaval, change in your life lately with the dissolution of CSN and your divorce. What kind of impact has that had on your creativity?
It was kind of shocking, I must admit. I guess I divorced not only my wife of 38 years, Susan Nash, but my band. I felt alone. I'm supported by a wonderful woman that I've been married to for the last year, Amy Grantham, who is not only a brilliant artist but a brilliant woman. And she's been supporting me. It's been lonely this last 3 or 4 years, I will admit. I do enjoy being a member of a band. But I have Shane Fontaine, who is a great guitar player and loves music. First saw the Hollies when he was 12 years old in London and has loved the music ever since. And he's such a great guitar player that he's not just waiting for his solo. He wants the song to live, and that's what's great about Shane. I have Todd Caldwell, who is the B3 organ player in the Crosby, Stills & Nash band, has been making music with me and Shane for the last 2 or 3 years, and I'm having a great time. I'm in control of what I do. I can change the set at any moment, and I often do. I get to sing songs that I've loved for many years and never got a chance to sing, and I'm having a good time, Ian.
The Everly Brothers were foundational for you in music, and I was wondering if you had a similar photography role model when you got started with that.
I was born into a very poor family in the north of England, and we didn't have pictures on the wall. But I loved photography from the moment my father turned me on to the actual act of photography, meaning putting a blank piece of paper into a reasonably colorless liquid and then waiting, you know, and then having this image appear out of nowhere. That was a piece of magic that I will never forget. So I began to collect photography. I collected paper images for many, many years. My favorite photographers were people like Dion Arbus, who was a New York photographer of greatness. Ouija, who was also a New York photographer, had a police radio in the back of his car so he could go to all these murders and take grotesque pictures of beauty, you know, out of the chaos. Ansel Adams, of course, great image maker, Steichen, Stieglitz, yes. I haven't collected any paper images for over 20 years. I've been collecting daguerreotypes, which were the very first photographs invented by Daguerre in France in 1839.
Wow, they take up a lot more room, I bet.
Yes, they do, because they're all cased.
Have you yourself switched to digital?
I waited for digital cameras to approach the resolution of film. And they surpassed that many years ago. And so I've been using a digital camera for many years. I bought my first one about 30 years ago in Japan. It was called a Da Vinci. It came out almost like a receipt for gasoline, you know, like And then it comes out, you know, terrible. Terrible resolution. But the digital world was a train that was coming at us, and we had, you know, both musically and photographically, we either got on the digital train or we got run over by the digital train. Mm-hmm. And here we are today, and I use a digital camera. But I will use anything. I don't care about the camera itself. I only care about what I'm pointing it at.
You obviously were part of the British invasion. Why was it so important for you to eventually become a U.S. citizen?
I didn't want to be outside of this society throwing, you know, song hand grenades into the middle of the government, you know, criticizing what was going on. I wanted to be a part of it. I love this country. I wanted to vote. I wanted to raise my voice. I wanted to be able to criticize this country and praise it, you know, depending on what was going on. I wanted to be a part of this country. That's why I've been an American citizen for over 40 years.
And I asked you this once before, but it was a couple years ago before an election. What do you make of the current state of affairs in the U.S.?
This country is a very different country than the one I came to love and be a part of. This Trump administration is on a certain road, and this road, to me personally, is pointing backwards. The Trump administration has undone a lot of incredible work that was done in the last 50 years, particularly in the environment. I love this country of the United States, but I certainly, truly believe that we deserve better.
You are known for having recorded everything, and you've also been seen as like the keeper of the flame for a lot of CSN projects and, you know, and greatest hits collections and bootlegs and so on. I'm wondering if there's like some unheard gems that you have future plans for that we haven't heard yet publicly.
Astonishing amount. I have, as you said, been the one that has recognize the importance of master tapes. I have, at my own expense, archived all of our tapes for all these years. And I was particularly glad when I heard about the terrible fire that happened in Hollywood at the Universal Music Group building, where a phenomenal amount of master recordings were destroyed in the fire. For instance, Buddy Holly's masters. Mm. Are you kidding me? Now, they say, well, you know, we have digital copies, but they aren't the master tapes. You know, digital is a very different world than analog. And it was a tragedy of what happened. And it was a tragedy that the Universal Music Group, you know, took 10 years to even admit that some terrible things had been happening in that fire, and some incredibly important masters were lost.
Did you lose anything in that?
I heard rumors that there were some Crosby, Nash things, but I think that they would have been digital copies. I have all our tapes. I know where they are.
Just one last thing on that. Has the recent sort of unrest between you and David, and I know you're in touch with Stephen and Neil, has that changed the way you hear the music at all? Because it sounds to me like you're still incredibly proud of what you guys did accomplish together.
I am. I'm incredibly proud. I'm very proud to have been the partners of David Crosby, Stephen Stills, and Neil Young. Who wouldn't be? We have made some tremendous music. But we, once again, we have to love each other. We have to like each other before we can make music together. And right now, we're at a complete impasse. Nobody talks to David. I used to talk to David a couple of times a day for 45 years. I haven't spoken to him in 3 years.
But if he picked up the phone, would you answer?
No.
Is there anything else that, you know, the public should know about, you know, what's going on at this impasse?
No. The public has no need to know. The public only has to know that we have to love each other before we make fine music, and it's not happening.
Okay. I guess the last thing is, I don't know when we'll do one of these again. Like I said, I don't take them for granted. So when you think about your own legacy, what do you think of that? What do you think your legacy is?
I hope that people will recognize the fact that I've tried to make things better. I've tried to make my life better. I've tried to make the life better of my wives and my children and my friends. I've tried to make everything better. I've always done this all my life, and I'll continue to do it. I'm 77 years old right now. I realize that I'm, you know, possibly coming to the end of my life. Quite frankly, either one of us could drop dead during this interview. I mean, life is strange, you know. So I realize that I've tried my best to make things better. It's quite simple. I've always tried to make things better.
That's Graham Nash. He's coming to our region this fall for dates at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, September 22nd, the Egg in Albany, September 28th, October 4th at the Academy of Music in Northampton, and October 15th at the Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. Graham Nash, it's always an honor to speak with you, and really, thank you for all of these interviews over the years. They've meant a lot to me.
Thank you very much, Ian, and thanks for having me on the round table.
I am a simple man, so I sing a simple song. I've never been so much in love, and never hurt so bad at the same time. I am a simple man, and I play a simple tune. Wish that I could see you once again across the room, like the first time. I just wanna hold you, I don't wanna hold you down. I hear what you're saying and you're spinning my head around, and I can't make it.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.